Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here, CEO, founder, Juggernaut Training Systems, Beers with Chad. Update from last week, new cast, beautiful blue color, mostly just for the way it sets off my eyes. I'm very proud of this cast, mostly because when they gave it to me, it fit kind of shitty, and anyone who knows me knows that I'm incredibly not handy, so getting my brain percolating and deciding to melt or boil this, and put this in boiling water like a mouthpiece and reform it to my arm, I was quite proud of my accomplishments there. Today we are drinking from Knee Deep Brewing Company Hoptologist Double IPA. Good old-fashioned 9%er from Deep Knee. They got several good beers I've had from here. So today I'm wanting to talk a little bit about... Cheers. Cheers. Give you some insight into my athletic career all the way from the early days, the very earliest days, and then answer some questions that you find folks asked me on Instagram. So let's just dive right into it. 10 pounds, 3 ounces, 75% of that was head. Born in Whittier, California. It's probably a security question on something. I'm 33 years old. I'll be 34 in July. For those of you who don't know, I'm adopted at birth. I'll just save that whole thing for another episode. But adopted, went home from the hospital with the family that raised me, my family. And just always been obsessed with sports from as early as I could possibly remember. I think a lot of it has to do with I have two older brothers, Adam and Zach. Adam is 12 years older than me. Zach is 9 years older than me. So, you know, I'm 4 years old and I'm seeing my 13 and 15-year-old brothers, and Zach, my middle brother, yeah, he's playing club soccer and playing in these tournaments, and I was like the mascot on the sidelines of these soccer tournaments. Some pretty great picks I'll try and dig up for you of me hitting like a sweet kind of Burt Reynolds playgirl type of pose, like leaned on the ball bag, sipping a Capri Sun, maybe a high C, eating a PB&J, or being on the sidelines of my oldest brother Adam's football games, being like a de facto little ball boy kind of role there. But I was exposed to sports very early. My, you know, brothers would be home in the driveway playing basketball or whatever, and I was just into it. So I started playing soccer when I was 4, maybe 5. Swim team, local neighborhood swim team, if you grow up where I did, Orange County, Irvine, California. Swim team is a big deal. Every neighborhood, like every little community, mass plan community in Irvine has their own swim team. And we go to battle every summer in the Irvine for the Irvine Championships. I was on the Troll Rock Rockets. Butterfly, freestyle, backstroke, sucked at breaststroke. Most 5-year-olds could not match my shoulder development in the butterfly particularly. And I was a very, very good youth swimmer. Even swimming for the Irvine Nova Aquatics, which is, I think, probably the most successful club swim team in the United States. Did that a lot. Started playing basketball, I think, when I was 8 years old. Every morning I would wake up probably 5:30, 6 o'clock. I've always been an early bird in that regard. I'd wake up early and I'd be downstairs watching the like 6 a.m. Sports Center, and this is 93, 94, 95, 96, that kind of time range from when I'm 6 to 9 years old. So this is prime Michael Jordan, this is This is Dallas Cowboys dynasty. This is a great sports time, and I'm watching that stuff, and then I go out in the driveway for 30 minutes before I get picked up. My carpool would pick me up to go to school, and just shooting baskets, trying to do what I did trying to do what I saw right then on SportsCenter. I remember having these, we had these VHS tapes called The Year in Sports. We had 1991 and 1993, and I think those were the kind of free gifts that you get when you subscribe to Sports Illustrated back in the day. Like, you know, subscribe now and every issue is $3.99 instead of $6.99, and you get this free VHS tape. And I would watch those endlessly. Like, I bet I'd watch them well over 100 times each, and would just try and copy that stuff, and was so into it. And like, I wrote a paper, I wrote a story at school. It would have been in second grade, I think, first or second grade. And the story I wrote was all about the 1993 NBA Finals. That's Bulls versus Suns, Jordan versus Barkley. Wrote about how Horace Grant blocked the shot to like win to end game six, all this stuff. Always just so into it. To the point of when I tried out, or when I was going to play football for the first time, I was 9 years old. Irvine Chargers, junior All-American football, and I knew that there was some level of tryout to this team. So to prepare myself for that, I may have just been on a binge marathon alternating Little Giants and Rocky IV, because I was taking those car bungee cords, you know, that you would use to like tie stuff down in the back of a truck, and I lashed as many of them as I could find together, tie myself to a tree in the backyard, and was running like band resisted sprints at 8 years old, all on my, you know, my own ideas were coming up with this. So that's how into it I was. And so soccer was big for me when I was young, played club soccer. Swimming was big, played, swam for a very renowned club team. Basketball was pretty significant for me. You know, played AAU travel basketball. And then there was a point when I was 8 or 9 years old that I didn't make some specific club soccer team. So I decided, hey, let me go and try and do track with my best friend from elementary school and junior high, Kevin Arts. He was killing it as a distance runner. So I was like, yeah, I'll go do track. And I was a shot putter and a sprinter. At the time, I think it was probably 50 and 100 meter, maybe even 50 and 100 yard. I'm not totally sure, but did that, started doing track when I was 8 years old, and continued that all the way until I was 24, or right before I turned 24. So once I got into high school, it was football and track. In football, I was an offensive and defensive lineman. When I started out in high school, my freshman year of high school, first day of freshman year, I was about 5'8", 170 pounds. By the time I graduated high school, I was 6 foot or 6'1", probably 6 foot, and I'm about 6'1" now, 275 pounds, right in that. So I gained 100 pounds in high school. That was on a delicious combination of chocolate milk, the whole box of Kraft mac and cheese with like a pound of hamburger mixed in, a Stag Steakhouse chili, if you're familiar with that, a lot of like 2-for-1 burrito deals, and a shitload of lifting, like 2, 3, 4 hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week, all the time. And I was just always really into it. So in football, I ended up by senior year being like an Orange County All-Star player, All-CAF, all that kind of stuff. But I was not particularly big. Even now, I'm 295, and frankly, with quarantine and drinking and too much time to cook, I think I was like 301 this morning, so I got to curtail that right now. But I don't think most people wouldn't think that I weighed that much. And when I was 265, 275 in high school, I had college football coaches asking me if I weighed 225. So I didn't get recruited by too many big schools. UCLA, I took official visit there for football and that kind of thing, but got offers from smaller schools, Davis, San Luis Obispo. But track was really my sport, throwing the shot put and the discus. So I was a two-time CIF champion here, which is our Southern California section, some like 600 and 60 schools, something like that. Won that twice, and then went to the University of California, Berkeley, on a track scholarship to throw the shot put there. Part of the number one men's recruiting class in the country, according to Track and Field News, 2004 recruiting class. And yeah, got up there to throw, redshirted my first year. My roommate, one of my great friends, Nate Rolfe, and I came in this recruiting class together. He was hammer throw, hammer and discus. I was shot put and a little bit of hammer. We're inseparable, like track, first roommates in the dorms, track team together, same events more or less, and probably half of our classes together. Great guy. We were both redshirting that year, so we decided to create our own team. So redshirting for track and field, you still get to compete at the meets, but we did not compete for Cal. We compete unattached. So we created Team Unattached, which had incredible uniforms that we found at a local running store. These black singlets, royal blue stripe down the middle, and then singlets. I feel very European or Australian saying that. I think European, I'd call it a vest. Australia is a singlet, like a tank top. And then split leg runners shorts, these electric blue runner shorts to match the stripe. And we would compete as Team Unattached, and we would try and beat the rest of the throwers from Cal in a little internal competition that we were having ourselves. So spent 1 year doing that. And then the next year, was on the team for the first semester, and it just was not a good situation. I won't go too much into that, but I'll say of our number one men's recruiting class, it was 13 guys, and I think only three finished their career at Cal. Everyone else transferred or quit track. So I did one semester of track, the first semester of my second year, and then the next semester I didn't do track or really lift, but I did party a lot, so that was fun. And from there, I wanted to transfer. I tried to transfer to either University of Georgia or University of North Carolina over Christmas break of that year, but the timing just was not right for that. So I ended up going back to Cal, just partying a bunch, and then transferring to a junior college down here in Southern California, where my best friend Paul and I, he was a javelin thrower at Cal. He and I still live maybe 2 miles apart. Lawyer, if you need any corporate litigation, hit him up. If you need any criminal defense stuff, his wife, Martina Tynert, Vigil Law Defense, holler at her. You're welcome, Marty. We moved down here to Newport Beach, lived about 100 meters from the sand. And at that point, I just wanted to coach. I started coaching high school football, started coaching high school track, started coaching, running the off-season program for our football team. And I was 19, just turning 20. I've been coaching, fairly full-time since then. And I didn't have any interest in doing track anymore. I was kind of disillusioned by my experiences with Cal, as many people were, though some of the coaches were great and I love them and have a lot of great friends from there, and still, support Cal. Went up to the Cal USC game this year, so go Bears. But it just was not the right situation for me. So we were just living at the beach. I was going to junior college sparingly, like 6 units of junior college, living 200 yards from the sand in Newport, partying a lot. And it was a great time. But the next year came and I started going to a school called Concordia University in Irvine, California. And at Concordia, there was a coach named Len Blutrick. And Coach Blue had also coached me my junior and senior year of high school. And he asked me more or less as a favor, like, hey, just come out and throw for us. Like, you don't even really need to practice because it's a small school. Like, you'll score some points for us. Just show up and do it. So I practiced like once or twice a week, and it was really not into it. Still coaching football, offensive and defensive line, running the off-season program, coaching track. Had a really good thrower. Got a guy to go from 48 feet to 58 feet my first year coaching the shot put. And was a very part-time athlete at that point. I had about 20 months off of throwing in the middle of my track career, which I don't recommend. That's not a good strategy. So I had a frustrating year. My freshman year at Cal, my redshirt year, team unattached year, I threw 55 feet in the shot put. I'd thrown with the high school shot 62-6 prior to that. So 55 feet with the 16 my freshman year. And then this, my fourth year, I'm not holding my thumb up, my fourth year in college, fourth year? Sure. Fourth year in college, I only threw 53 feet 1 inch. And I was pissed and embarrassed and like kind of hurt my back, and there's all kinds of shit. It was a bad year. So a couple weeks go by and I'm like, you know, telling my parents, like, I don't want to do track next year. And even though I had thrown very poorly for myself, I'd actually, you know, scored a couple points for them at nationals for our small school, and they were going to give me a little bit of scholarship money. And Concordia is a private school, expensive and all that. So my parents said, you know, if you want to go there, you need to do track and get the scholarship money. Otherwise, like, you can't go there, or at least we can't pay for it. So I took the scholarship money. My parents helped me out. My brother actually paid for a lot of it. And then I took some student loans out as well, and decided, you know, after like a week long pity party for myself about not wanting to do track anymore, I decided, like, all right, you have to do it. You know, you're going to do track, so we can't make it like last year. You got to be good again. So that summer, I started training my ass off again. A lot of times I'd train with the high school football guys that I coached, or train at the same time as them during the summer, because if I was training at the same time as these, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-olds, even though I was only 19 or 20, I was Coach Smith, and Coach Smith could do no wrong in any of their eyes, so I could not, you know, miss reps. I couldn't miss any lifts. I could not show any level of weakness. So I just trained my ass off all summer, got back in way better shape, and the next year, after throwing 53-1, my redshirt junior year, come back my senior and threw 63 feet 10 inches, won the NAIA indoors and outdoors. I think it was the third farthest throw that year among American collegiates. So that's D1, D2, D3, NAIA all put together. And it was a great year. It was fantastic. Right after the track season, probably through at nationals like May 15th. Then the next week was on a vacation with my family and was contacted about, because I, of all irony, I think that's the right phrase. I may not understand it like Alanis Morissette, but of all the irony, Cal Berkeley, where I had transferred away from, offered me a job as their throws coach, and I decided to pass on that job. And after passing on that job, when some people heard that I was still staying in Southern California, it came about an opportunity for an investor who had some interest if I wanted to open a gym. So I started writing what I thought was a business plan, so on and so forth, opened Juggernaut Train Systems. Same time that I opened up Juggernaut Train Systems, Coach Blue, my coach in my last 2 years of college, my last 2 years of high school, someone who was just a great role model, like a grandfather kind of figure to me, passed away from cancer. And that was a tough thing, but I knew I wanted to keep doing track to kind of honor Coach Blue for that next year. But, you know, between running Juggernaut, which that first year, and any new small business owner can tell you, it's just nonstop. It was 70 hours a week doing that. I'm trying to train. I'm coaching people all day on my feet. It was tough. So I kept throwing through that season, you know, mostly without any real coaching situation. I did, you know, to humble brag myself here, I got to work with John Gadina, multiple-time Olympian, multiple-time national champion, former collegiate record holder on a couple occasions. And then after I ended up retiring, he said to a mutual friend, who I don't think he knew that we were, that was a mutual friend, a guy named Zach Lloyd, tells Zach, like, oh, you know that Chad Smith guy? He's like, yeah. He's like, oh man, he could throw 70 feet in a year. He's like, he just needs a coach. But that, unfortunately, was after I had retired, though. It was a bit bittersweet, I guess, to hear him say something like that. So I threw in my last track meet in May of 2010. So that one season as a post-collegiate. And at that point, I realized, like, man, I'm really strong. So what about this powerlifting thing? I was sponsored by Elite FTS at the time as a shot putter, and I figured, like, well, I'm with this powerlifting company, so let's do a powerlifting meet. Drink break. I need to say that before I take a drink, because people listening to just the audio versions, they always tell me that it throws them off. They think that the feed died or something. So I was sponsored by Elite, and I figured, you know, I might as well do a powerlifting meet. So I'd written the program, the Juggernaut Method, about 6 months prior to that, and was using it with a lot of clients in the gym. And we were a sport performance gym. This is 2009, early 2010. Powerlifting was not big. Weightlifting was not big. CrossFit had not really hit yet and helped grow those sports. And that's not what I wasn't a powerlifter. We were not a powerlifting gym. We were a sport performance gym, and that's what I coached. I coached football players and jiu-jitsu and volleyball and soccer and water polo and swimming and all this stuff. So I was using the Juggernaut Method with them, and I said, all right, I'm going to use this for my own powerlifting meet. So I did it to the T, the exact same way it's written in the first book. I started training for that, you know, trained for that July, August, September, October, did my first powerlifting meet, coincidentally the first USPA meet, the first one that existed, in October 2010, squatted 800, benched 462, deadlifted 700. Sorry that you didn't do that at your first powerlifting meet. I have good genetics, and I trained for a long time. Hate me because you ain't me. But yeah, I had a pretty good first powerlifting meet. Granted, I was a Division I athlete and had been lifting weights for 10 years very seriously at that point. So I go 800 in reps, 462, 700. I think the seeds of my disdain for equipped powerlifting began with that experience too, because one, I didn't really even know what equipped powerlifting was going into it, to the point that when I was talking to the customer service person at Elite to get my singlet as a sponsored athlete, I got a whole free singlet and some free wrist wraps. It was not a good deal, but maybe that's the topic for another day. They got like 31 articles and $40,000 for my book though. So I was talking to the customer service person and looking at this the page on the website, and I was like, oh, give me this one. Send me this Metal Ace Pro Squatter. And she's like, I thought you were competing raw. And I was like, I am. She said, well, that's a squat suit. And I said, what's that? Because I'm just looking at that squat suit. It looked just like a singlet to me. And one was $200 and one was $50. So I was like, oh, I better get this $200 one. It seems like it's going to be way better. So I ask for the $200 singlet and find out that it's a squat suit, but I'm still not 100% sure what that was. Though I'd read every Elite FTS article, I'd read every Westside Barbell.com article at that point. This is when Elite used to just release like 4 or 5 articles a week on Fridays, and I would wait the whole week to read them. I had read literally like every article they had, and I'd seen the word bench shirt or super suit. But didn't, it had no context to me. So I didn't understand what it was. And then I'm at my meet and I'm waiting to do rack heights or put my openers in or whatever. And this extremely fat, short guy, in the line next to me waiting to put, you know, to get his, I think, bench rack height, asked me what my opener, what I'm opening at. And I said 725. And this was the squat. And he kind of scoffed. Me too. In the bench. He bombed out. He was benching equipped and then bombed out. Classic equipped benching move. But so that was the start of my powerlifting career, the Central California Open, San Luis Obispo High School, October 2010, the first ever USPA meet. Went on from there, started working with Josh Bryant as a coach for my next two meets. He helped me total 2165. Then I squatted, the next meet I squatted 905, it was a 308, I weighed in at 305.8, and I weighed that 305, 310, anywhere, you know, depending on the day. After that, bombed out of a meet. If you were ever at the first USPA Nationals, you may have been there when I bombed out at 8:25. I on this 905 squadron, when I squad 905, or maybe the attempt after I attempted 935, I really hurt my hip flexor and had like shit squat training the next train cycle, but figured like, you know, it'll just happen at the meet, and go to the meet, miss 8:25 twice, and then just pulled out of the meet because like I just squatted 905. I ain't doing a meet where I squat 8:25, and it was in Vegas. My buddies were there. There was more important things to do than lift shitty at a powerlifting meet. And at that point, the business of Juggernaut, this is late 2011, so we'd been open for about 2 years. We were gaining clients, but you know, lacked a system, lacked. We were breaking even. We broke even after about 6 months, but weren't able to kind of turn this corner. And a thing that a lot of in-person gyms probably struggle with. So at that point, I was like, you know, it's probably better. And this, I think, was part of what contributed to the tough meet is we're just really stressed out about the gym and about work. So I decided to take a step back from competing. We had a combine prep going. I was coaching a bunch of high school football guys, getting them ready to go to college. And so those first from this meet in, I think, November of 2011, where I withdrew in Vegas, to about mid-March, early April of 2012, I was training like twice a week, had lost 20 pounds, was just focused on being a businessman. I kind of was satisfied with what I'd done in powerlifting, to be honest. I just squatted what was then the American record in the 308s, a 900-pound squat. I was only one of two Americans squatting 900 in competition at that time. And I figured, you know, I need to focus on coaching. I need to focus on growing my business. And then I saw, you know, a Facebook event or something for California's Strongest Man, which was going to be in Huntington Beach, the next city over from me, in 6 days after I saw it. So I contacted the promoter and asked him if I could still sign up, and he said yes. So I signed up. I had never pressed a log before. We had a log, I just never used it. And so I tried to figure out how to use that, getting advice from people on Facebook. The only strongman thing I'd ever really done was flipped a tire. So I trained, you know, the events as much as I could for a couple days. Show up there. I think I got fourth or fifth. Martin Litsis was competing there. I still honestly think that I got third, but I think that they fucked me on the scoring because the guys who run it, I now know, hate me. That's another hate me because they ain't me situation. And I guess that would have been my first clue about it. They didn't want some guy who signed up 6 days before coming to their show and podiuming, but that's neither here nor there. But it was shitty weather, some of the worst weather I've ever had in Southern California, but it was a ton of fun. So I was like, yep, strongman, I'm going for it. I'm doing this. I'd watched it on TV all growing up, and I was all in. So that was, what, now March of 2012. I then did my next show, I think 4 weeks later, barely missed by like 2 points, getting a Giants Live invite, then just missed my pro card, and then in November 2012 got my pro card in strongman by winning NAS North American Strongman Nationals. And I know there's a lot of federations now, but I don't exactly know what they all are, but at that time NAS was the only one. So won the amateur nationals, turned pro, and then from there 2013 kind of went back and forth competing powerlifting and strongman. Had a couple herniated discs, and then decided to come back from that with only powerlifting in 2014, 2015, 2016. And I'll talk about that more in a later episode, but that's kind of the deal. Little kid, every sport, swimming, soccer, basketball, track, you know, I went to a private school, and that might have been probably the hardest competitions we had, because of the 24 boys in my class that I went most of them through kindergarten through eighth grade with, 8 of us ended up as Division I scholarship athletes. So it was insanely competitive recess and lunch games of basketball, soccer, foursquare, tetherball, whatever it is. and then track and football in high school, and then on to track in college, and track as a post-collegiate, then powerlifting and strongman, then just powerlifting, and now jiu-jitsu. And I'll talk about that powerlifting to jiu-jitsu transition in another episode as well. But here I want to answer a couple people's questions. So maybe the most common question on here is, are Marissa and I dating? And yes, we've actually been dating for on and off for about 7 years. We just never really share about it publicly because, to be honest, the idea of sharing your personal life on social media and even doing something like what I'm doing talking about right now is extremely awkward and strange to me. And I kind of think that maybe people should just mind their own business, but that's not the world we live in. So yeah, we've been together for a long time. I love her very much. She's as wonderful and beautiful and funny and talented as even more so than all of you see on Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff. Other questions. Let's see. Favorite bands. He wrote favorite bands, LOL. I don't know what's favorite or what's funny about that question. Maybe he meant it as like a secret. I mean, bands like West Side type of accommodating resistance bands, which if so, well played, sir. But if not, as specific favorite bands, Tyler Childers is high. I mean, that he's getting played a lot in my car. If you want to know about my musical selections, the playlist on Spotify, World's Strongest Hipster, will give you a lot of insight to that. But, man, I got all kind of stuff that I listen to. Eighth grade, I was in eighth grade in 1999 into 2000, and while going to Mariners Christian School here in Orange County, California, growing up in Irvine, there was some point in eighth grade that I heard the song Bling Bling by the Cash Money Millionaires, and apparently I just thought, like, this fucking speaks to me, because from that point on, Cash Money, into those early 2000s, a lot of Dirty South rap, Lil Jon, Petey Pablo, all that stuff, all kinds of hip-hop in the early 2000s. I don't know that this is a PC word to say, but I was a huge wigger. I wore Echo and Sean John and Timberlands and Air Force Ones and Fat Farm. I did not, I repeat, did not wear any FUBU. I knew that the us they were referring to was not me, and I did not cross that barrier, but that's part of the reason why I know how to seawalk, why I'm just so generally cool and soulful, I'd say, was that time in my life. So I've got that kind of stuff. You can find some playlists of that on my Spotify. But yeah, no specific bands that I like always listen to, but go check that playlist out and you'll find a bunch of stuff like that. Had a couple questions to the effect of, if I had another job or a different career, what would I want that to be? So my degree is in history. Like I said, I started coaching high school football and track and running off-season programs when I was 19 years old. And I came back to Southern California from Cal really to do that, to become the head coach, to become a head football coach for high school, and kind of accompanying that here in California, at least, is being a teacher. So my degree is in history. So I planned on being a history teacher and being a head football coach. I was obsessed with coaching football from a leadership standpoint, from a personal development standpoint, from a strategy standpoint, team culture, all that stuff. If you are not familiar with De La Salle High School, I think The Game Stands Tall, they made a movie about it. The book of that is much better. There's also a book called One Great Game. There's documentaries called The Perfect Effort and One, I think, is the other one. Everything about De La Salle High School I was obsessed with, because they were so amazing in their team culture, and that led them to not losing a game for 12 years, 151 straight games. So that is the career path I was on, was coaching high school football and being a high school teacher. Thank God I am not that, because even when you're the head coach, you still got a boss, the athletic director and the principal and superintendents, all that stuff. When you're a teacher, you got a bunch of bosses. Kids these days, yeah, that's right, I said kids these days seem like they're pricks, so I don't really want to teach them. I don't do well with a boss, so I'm glad that I diverted that, though I did very much enjoy my time coaching high school football. So that's probably the career path I was on. As far as other careers that interest me, when I was a kid, I always wanted to... there were two jobs, besides like professional athlete kind of things. I wanted to be a sports agent. We had a guy who goes to the church my family goes to, named Jeff Morad, and he was like a real big time agent, like a Lee Steinberg type of guy, Scott Boras type of guy. I got to meet him and talk to him about being an agent, so I was really into that. I was also really into the idea of being on like ESPN, being a sportscaster, sports announcer. And if there's anything else that I want to do now, it would be that kind of thing, the doing sports podcasts and sports talk type of stuff, whether Colin Cowherd, big fan of him, definitely my favorites. Marissa's gonna make fun of me when she hears this. Bill Simmons show. I tried to slide in the Bill Simmons DMs a couple times, like just to see if he wanted to be friends, and he never read them. But probably my number one favorite just person to listen to for sports talk stuff is Ryan Russillo. I think we have a very similar sense of humor in our early and mid 90s references, and yeah, I just like his takes on a lot of stuff. So that's something that I would like to do if I wasn't doing this, or would even like to do in addition to doing this, is that kind of sports talk stuff. A lot of what's my favorite beer questions. Probably number one on the list is Alpine Duet, IPA from Alpine Brewing Company down in Alpine, California. I always thought that they were from Colorado because they have mountains and stuff on their label, but it's in like kind of inland San Diego. Yeah, it's great. Nelson from there is great. I don't know that I've ever windows up. I've never had a bad beer from Alpine, and they very kindly sent me some beers for mentioning them before. So if you guys want to do that again, I'll drink them. And last question I'll talk about today. Favorite books. I see that one on here too, and I'm going to say favorite non-training books. I've been reading a lot more, reading with my ears, audiobooks. I couldn't tell you the last time I like read with my eyes a book, but audiobooks, of the ones that are saved on my phone, Sports Gene is up there, Range is up there, both by David Epstein. I just finished Good to Great. I just finished another book called The End of Marketing. So I've been a bit more into the business type of books lately. But I used to read when I was coaching high school football. That was something I was really into, was reading like biographies and personal development and leadership type of books. When the Game Stands Tall, De La Salle book is a great one. But if there is one that stands out, it's called Season of Life by Jeffrey Marks. And it is about Jeffrey Marks, who is a writer, a journalist, who reconnects later in life with a guy named Joe Ehrman, who's coaching high school football, but had previously played for the Indianapolis or Baltimore Colts, I believe. And the author, Jeffrey Marks, was a ball boy for them, and he reconnects with him later in life. And Joe Ehrman has gone through this sort of transformation from sort of 1970s NFL wild man to, leader of young men, high school football coach, and pastor. And it is a book about relationships, male relationships, really, like why a lot of 30, 40 plus year old guys don't have a best friend, and why how masculinity is looked at. And it's a very powerful book, and I would highly suggest it to anyone. I've read it 3 times, I think. It's been a while. I should give it another look. I remember reading one of the stories in it where Joe Ehrman is talking about his brother dying of cancer. I was reading it on an airplane. I was crying in the seat in the airplane. Maybe the people next to me looked at me weird. But great book. Season of Life. Highly suggest that. So there's a lot of questions. I'm going to do more episodes. I can drink beers more frequently and talk to you fun folks on the internet. Now that we're in Corona Mania, every other day, probably not every day. I shouldn't do that. But thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Cheers. See you next time.